the hemostats really aren't used all that much except for the management of abscess. Interestingly, I had one case where I was using a hemostat to open up an abscess cavity, and the hinge on the hemostats broke, and the little tiny screw that held the two pieces together broke. And I had to basically go into this abscess cavity and try to dig out the little tiny screw. That was an eye-opening moment for me where I realized that, wow, it's not just having to open up another kit. This may lead to another procedure. I may have to do some advanced imaging to find this, you know, piece of broken equipment.
Every day, they slay the dragons of healthcare-acquired infections and dangerous microbial fire breathers. While you may not see them during your next hospital stay, they will be there ensuring the safest possible surgeries by skillfully wielding their disinfecting weapons of mass microbial destruction. They are sterile processing professionals. And this is Beyond Clean, the central nexus for the people, processes, and products that are pushing the global sterile processing industry forward. Join us every week as we introduce you to the unsung heroes, leaders, and innovators who are fighting dirty around the globe. And now, it's time to go Beyond Clean.
This week on Beyond Clean, we speak with Dr. Patrick O'Malley, emergency physician practicing outside of Columbia, South Carolina. Dr. O'Malley went to medical school at East Carolina and did residency in emergency medicine at Carolina's Medical Center in Charlotte, North Carolina. He has 13 years of community emergency medicine and urgent care experience, and his main interest is laceration management. Disclosures, he developed and sold a wound irrigation device to Centurion Medical Products, a division of Medline, and he has also done consulting work for these companies. Mike, I'm really excited, but I know you're even more excited than I am because you had a chance to meet Dr. O'Malley at an event, have a conversation around the work that we're going to be discussing today, and really it's quality and instrument quality in surgeon and physician's hands that sterile processing supports every single day throughout the country.
Yeah. And of course, obviously the first thing that, you know, kind of impacted me was number one, he showed several pictures of some of the work that he had done in laceration management, and it was just blown away by how good it was. And then just to get a chance to talk to him, he's obviously a very humble guy, and which we'll see that in the interview. But I think the thing that really made me say this guy needs to be on our show is the fact that he is one of these people who is constantly looking for a way to quantify how quality impacts patient outcomes. And I mean, that's almost like a mantra for our show. So when he was preaching that from one of his presentations, I said, that's a guy that we've got to get on the show.
Yeah. And he's also an inventor, a disruptor, and an innovator, which are all common core traits and values that we share in common. I love having innovators on our show.
HealthMark has intelligent solutions for your cleaning verification program, including products to measure water temperature, water quality, cleaning efficacy, and directly test for residual soil left on instruments. Find your tools for cleaning verification at hmark.com. There you will learn about our TOSI and SonoCheck that test the performance of mechanical washers as recommended in sterilization standards guidelines. Other products like CartWash Check test for mechanical efficiency and target temperature. The ProCheck 2 can detect residual protein to a very low level. Go to hmark.com today for all of your cleaning verification testing needs.
It's 2023 and there's big news for IST. A closed warning letter, a new product launch, and a 10-year anniversary. OneTray IST has a lot to celebrate this year. OneTray's 2006 cleared 48-hour storage claim was acknowledged by the FDA, and the company is pushing forward, offering the total solution for reprocessing. OneTray maximizes reprocessing time, easy
Multitrax adds flexibility with instrument organization, and their upcoming product, OneCart, a sealed case cart with a smaller footprint and a perfect option for off-site sterilization, completes the total solution. Experience a year of efficiency with OneTray. For more information on the closure of the warning letter, visit OneTray.com/FDA warning letter. That's OneTray.com/FDA warning letter. Otherwise, you can reach out to the company by calling 937-619-0138 or visit OneTray.com/contact.
You're listening to Beyond Clean, the global voice of sterile processing.
Joining us now is Dr. Patrick O'Malley, emergency physician at Newberry County Memorial Hospital. And Dr. O'Malley, I know you had a chance to meet my co-host, Mike Matthews, at a conference not too long ago, and specifically on the topic of the study that you did around single-use instruments. And I could tell you, having worked in the repair industry and working with all the different departments, the emergency room has a unique set of needs when it comes to instrumentation. And I'm really glad to get this very different perspective. We've done 100 episodes or more of the Beyond Clean podcast, but we've yet to talk about this particular topic. So thank you for joining us today.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
So why don't we start at the beginning and really set the table. What drew you to this particular topic and ultimately to do a little bit informal research and gather some survey information?
Absolutely. So my interest in, you know, being in the emergency department, one of the main things that we're called to do is to manage lacerations. Being in, you know, the community setting instead of an academic setting, and oftentimes in small hospitals and even urgent cares, there is no plastic surgeon. We're the ones who are responsible for repairing all lacerations, oftentimes on the face. And, you know, we want to do a good job. It's not possible to call in a plastic surgeon, so the buck really does stop with us. And it's important. And we take, you know, most emergency physicians take a lot of pride in their work. And so, you know, laceration management is a passion of mine. And over the years, having worked in a number of different facilities, the quality of laceration kit or single-use instrument kit, you know, kind of synonymous there, the quality of instruments that we use in the emergency department and urgent care setting can vary widely. And that really does affect the job that we do. And in speaking with physicians over the years, I have come to realize that this is a very common pain point in our practice. And that was kind of the driving force for me wanting to put this paper together and hopefully being able to provide some data that other physicians across the country would be able to use to help influence decision makers at their hospital to let them get better instruments.
Yeah, I remember seeing, I actually sat in on one of your sessions, and you had several kind of example pictures where you could see some of the work that you had done in terms of laceration repairs, and they were honestly just astounding what the degree of work that you're being required to perform just there in the ER. And so I'm curious, you know, in this survey, which, by the way, I mean, the survey is available. I believe it was, I don't want to say viral, but it was pretty popular there on LinkedIn for a little while, and for anybody to use. And I'm curious, you know, there were some opinions, there were some open opinion sections, and I'm curious, what were some of the opinions on single-use instruments versus reusable instruments? Could you kind of summarize what those viewpoints were?
Absolutely. So the overwhelming majority of clinicians, and this was physicians, and I think there were several physician assistants and nurse practitioners who replied back to this. The overwhelming majority, I think it was around 88%, used single use, as opposed to roughly 11 or 12% who had autoclaved instruments in their facility. So the overwhelming majority of people who replied to this were referring to their experience with single use instruments. It's pretty overwhelming. Most people are not happy with the instruments that they're forced to work with. You know, some of the quotes that we've got, I really wanted to put something in there so that people could free text. It wasn't just a yes or no. And I wanted to be able to get true feelings, because this is it's kind of an emotional issue when you start talking to physicians and they start sharing their experience and just the frustrations that we have with these inexpensive kits. It's pretty remarkable that the experiences are very much the same. They know that they're going to break. They're going to have to open up extra kits, and it's ubiquitous. It's everywhere. So it's kind of nice being able to put all that together in a single paper and really show that physicians across the country feel the same way.
So I think you mentioned a couple of things, but I just want to kind of take a magnifying glass and look at,
sure,
you know, what are some of those ways that these instruments, and I mean, I'm going to go out on a limb here and assume that it may be more frequent with less expensive single use instruments, but it's possible for even for high quality reusable instruments to fail. But
absolutely.
What are those ways that they can fail?
Okay, so in your standard single-use laceration kit, and I'm assuming the same thing goes for any reusable instruments, in the emergency department, most kits are going to have four standard instruments. You've got a needle driver, which is going to hold the needle, the needle and string, essentially, to actually do the repair. You've got hemostats that are sometimes used. It seems like they're used more often for abscess management, to be able to open up a pocket of pus. Then you have tissue forceps, which are going to be used to hold the tissue, to manipulate it. And then, of course, you're going to have scissors to be able to debride tissue and to be able to cut the thread. The most common thing that we experience difficulty with in the emergency department are going to be with the needle driver and with the scissors. The hemostats really aren't used all that much, again, except for the management of abscess. Interestingly, I had one case where I was using a hemostat to open up an abscess cavity, and the hinge on the hemostats broke, and the little tiny screw that held the two hinges, or the two pieces together, broke. And I had to basically go into this abscess cavity and try to dig out a little tiny screw. That was kind of an eye-opening moment for me, where I realized that, wow, it's not just having to open up another kit. This may lead to another procedure. I may have to do some advanced imaging to find this, you know, piece of broken equipment. That was with the hemostat. Scissors, if they, you know, believe it or not, sometimes the scissors just won't cut the thread, which is kind of embarrassing when you're trying to cut thread and family members are staring at you and you have to go open up another kit just because you can't cut the thread of the suture material. But the biggest piece of equipment that we have difficulty with is the needle driver. Again, that's the piece, the hinged instrument that holds the suture needle, and you're using that to force the needle through the skin and being able to pick up the tip of the needle and bring it through. It's also what we use to tie the knots. So you're using the needle driver to hold the thread as you're tying knots. And the difficulty that we see, especially with smaller, thinner, more delicate suture materials, such as like a 6-0 proline, every time you try to tie a knot, the thread gets caught in the hinge and the thread will break. Or every single time you're trying to, it just gets stuck, it gets caught, the dried blood. It can be very, very cumbersome. It's a nuisance. And that's probably the most difficult piece of equipment that we have to work with. It's the most important one, and it's most likely to have problems.
So kind of following along that line then, does that have measurable impacts on the outcome for those patients who are coming to you? And obviously they're in an emergency room, so probably it's a very tense situation most of the time anyway. You know, my dad was a woodworker, and so I have been in the ED with him on more than one occasion with, you know, a laceration of some sort. Those aren't comfortable situations. And so I'm curious, what is the impact then that these failures, or perhaps your instrument isn't functioning the way that you need it to, what impact does that actually have on that patient's outcome?
That's an excellent question. And I tried in this paper, that's what I tried to get some feedback on. Now, this wasn't a randomized controlled trial with high-quality surgical instruments versus single-use instruments, and we didn't look at any outcomes 3, 6, 12 months down the road to see if there was any difference in cosmetic repair, anything like that. This was really more to get what the physicians felt was impacted by the use of these single-use instruments. And what we found were several things, is that when you're using a lower quality set of instruments, it is perceived by the clinician that they're not able to do as good of a job, that they are concerned that the cosmetic outcome may not be as good. So I think that it's, when you're working with these type of instruments and you're working with something that you don't trust and you don't have confidence in, you don't think that you're going to be able to do as good of a job. So you're going into it kind of with, you're almost kind of going into it behind the eight ball. And you know that it's going to be more stressful. You're just concerned that you're not able to do as good of a job. And that's just not what physicians in general or anybody in general. I mean, take for instance your dad. I mean, your dad doesn't want to go in and do woodwork with inferior quality instruments, and we don't either. And it's interesting that it's perceived that emergency physicians should just be able to make do with whatever they are given, whereas general surgeons or plastic surgeons or anybody else, they're not expected to work with inferior instruments, but we are. And I think that that's, almost a point of pride for a lot of emergency physicians is, you give me whatever you're going to give me and I'm going to do a good job with it. But I think that it is a little bit of a pain point. And, we just want to have the best equipment that we can have to be able to do a good job for our patients, because, a lot of these lacerations and these repairs are their kids' faces, and it's, we want our patients to be able to look back 2, 5, 10 years from now and, hopefully not even see that scar. But if we don't have the equipment that we feel like we need, it makes our jobs more difficult.
I want to go back to something that you kind of mentioned a couple of times, and I think this may land on our listeners as a little unusual, because most of our listeners are probably coming from primarily the OR. And in the OR, if a physician wants a particular instrument or a particular type of instrument, typically that surgeon will just essentially yell at somebody until they give it to them. And I've been on the receiving end of that many, many times, that, sometimes they even have preferences down to the specific manufacturer. So it's not enough that it has, manufacturer A's hemostat. It has to be manufacturer B's hemostat. But you mentioned that in many cases, physicians are being forced to be used inferior quality instruments. Is that common in some of these outside departments, like the emergency room, for example?
I'm kind of smiling behind my phone because this will be an interesting discussion here. Looking at the study, one of the questions was, have you ever requested better quality instruments? 67% said yes, 33% said no. If you asked to get better quality instruments, were you able to? 37 said yes, and 62% said no. So overwhelmingly, physicians are asking for something better, and overwhelmingly, they're told no. Now, we're not talking about $50, $70, $100 single-use kits. From my understanding, these things are probably in the $8 to $12, $13 range. Really, really cheap ones are probably less than $5. So again, we're not talking about a new surgical robot here. We're talking about a very inexpensive commodity type piece of equipment. And the overwhelming reason is cost. And it's interesting that people who have absolutely no clinical experience, or they're not the ones that are repairing it. It's really, these decisions are based on a line item on a spreadsheet, period. And the reason is they have to use it throughout the whole hospital system. So we can't get you exactly what it is that you want. It's basically just, it's not up for discussion. That's what people are saying. That's what the free text answers say. It, just use what's available. Quit whining. It's not something to be discussed. So it really, it makes us feel as though we don't have any input here. And, you know, like you said, you know, you're used to hearing what, you know, maybe a subspecialty surgeon or a general surgeon, you know, they want, you know, this specific, you know, piece of equipment that's made in a specific factory in Germany. We just want something that works. You know, we're not asking for too much. You know, we just want something that's going to work, be reliable, and let us do our job. So it is. It's a very different situation in the emergency department than what would be experienced in the operating room.
And I have to imagine, I mean, you made mention earlier that, you know, this has an impact on the physician's, you know, attitude about the work that they do and kind of the stress level that they're walking into. So I would imagine that, again, going back to regardless of whether or not we're talking about single use or reusable instruments, that the likelihood of not having the specific instrument that you want or just uh-huh. flat out not trusting the instruments that you have has uh-huh. to have an impact on the physician satisfaction.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So that was, you know, that's interesting that you bring that up. You know, one thing that we see and we hear about all the time in healthcare now is patient satisfaction. I mean, it's on billboards. Every time you go to a doctor's office, you're going to get you get blood drawn at a lab, you're going to get two or three letters about, you know, how satisfied were you? Well, one thing that we don't see in medicine a lot of times is healthcare providing a physician satisfaction. You know, how happy are the physicians with, you know, how this type of thing is being managed and how hospitals and urgent cares respond to physician requests? And I put that in there as a question, is how does this issue affect your clinician satisfaction? And the question was, do poor quality instruments have a negative impact on clinician satisfaction? 93.6% said yes. That's pretty unanimous. Whenever I know that I'm going to be repairing a laceration, there's, you know, I've worked in a lot of different facilities. Fortunately, where I work now has great kits, and I never have any issues. One of the other places that I work, I try to avoid doing lacerations because I know it's going to be a frustration. I'm not alone in that. Physicians across the country, you know, some of the free text answers from this were, we're craftsmen. We want quality tools. I should have effective tools. It makes me angry. Adds unnecessary stress on an already time-pressured person. Frustrating when we don't have working equipment. Makes a difficult job even more difficult. And this one right here, it reinforces the perception that administration is not listening to us. Again, we're not talking about a new robot. We just want a quality single-use laceration kit that's going to let me do my job.
And I mean, that's a really interesting perspective, because when you talk about, you know, that craftsman who needs their tools to work properly, you know, mm-hmm. from our side, you know, we're the sterile processing professionals. We're the ones who are sort of the gatekeepers of those tools. And yet it feels like many times that we have almost no impact on physician satisfaction or patient outcomes or any of those factors. And yet, you know, we have, you know, here for us in black and white, a study that says the exact opposite. Like, yes, the value of the usefulness and the ability of the tools to do the job impact both the patient outcomes and the physician satisfaction. And so one more piece that I wanted to ask you about is, I know almost every department runs on certain key performance indicators. And uh-huh. in the emergency room, the biggest KPI is throughput. And so I would have to imagine that, you know, a poorly functioning instrument affects throughput negatively, right?
Absolutely. And that was another one of the questions, because, you know, in the emergency department, we're measured on every single quality time. The time the patient hits the door until the time I see them, from the time I see them until I make a disposition decision, from the time I make the disposition decision until the time the patient leaves the department. I mean, so we're measured on all these metrics all the time. It's mind-numbing. If I've got if I'm working in a fast track, you know, kind of a lower acuity level part of the emergency department, I may, or if I'm working in urgent care facility that I used to work in, actually did a lot more laceration repair there than I do in the ER, especially during the summer. You've got kids are outside playing, and I may have over a 12-hour shift, I may have 4 or 6 lacerations over the course of the day. Let's say half of the laceration kits that I use that day, just to throw out a number, are faulty or defective. Well, in the middle of a procedure, I have to either yell out to a nurse to ask them to come and bring me something, or I have to stop what I'm doing, go find another one. You may spend an extra 5 or 10 minutes messing around trying to get the equipment that you need. So let's say that happens 2 or 3 times over the course of a shift, or in a busy emergency department, it may happen, you know, several times to 3 or 4 different physicians. You end up adding additional time to patients being in the department. And it does impact throughput. It does impact the time that patients are in the ER, and, you know, maybe keeping somebody else out in the waiting room for an additional period of time and they end up leaving without being seen, which is another metric that we get dinged on. So bottom line is anything that makes me have to take longer to manage and disposition the patient, it just negatively affects throughput and emergency department efficiency. And when you're trying to hump through, you know, 30, 40 patients in a shift, that it adds up.
Well, yeah, you know, time is money. And Mike's been doing such an awesome job with this interview. I figured I would jump in for a gratuitous question here. But speaking of the finances, when we talk about time is money, what is the financial impact of lower quality instruments and having to call for extra sets? Is there a way to quantify that?
I think that there probably is. From my experience, I've done a fair amount of medical device development. I've worked with and spoken with a lot of different medical device companies, and that's led me to have discussions with hospital purchasing departments. So, you know, I think that I've got a decent handle on it, but there is a lot of confusion with what is true cost. You know, how much does something actually cost? How much does the patient get charged for it? So it is sometimes difficult to be able to get a definitive answer on this. But to the best of my understanding and ability to get answers, from what I hear from sales reps and from hospitals, is that your standard single-use laceration kit is going to be anywhere from the $5 to $15 range. So there's a fair degree of variability there. Most emergency, in a small emergency department like where I am right now, we may go through 0 to 5 laceration kits in a day. If we're using something that's a little bit more expensive and it's going to be a higher quality, what are we really looking at? Maybe an extra $10, $20 a day in the grand scheme of things. Over the course of a year, what are we looking at? And let's see, $3,500 to $7,200 additional dollars for a better quality kit that is not going to fail. It's going to allow me to do my job. And then, you know, all these other tangible things that we could look at and talk about, patient satisfaction, clinician satisfaction. You know, I think in the grand scheme of things, it's a drop in the bucket so that a hospital will know that their physicians are able to take better care of their patients, and the physicians are going to be much more satisfied, and they know that they've got the tools that they need to be able to do a good job.
And so even wait times, right? I mean, I would think times would be impacted.
I think so. I mean, it's some of these lacerations that we are forced to repair in the emergency department. I mean, sometimes it's a 30, 45, 60-minute process. Yeah, I've got a visual in my mind of a large forehead laceration that I put together. If I have to stop 2 or 3 times to go get an additional laceration kit, that just turns that in, you know, that turns that 30-minute laceration into a 45-minute one. So, yeah, it definitely can affect waiting room times. And then at some point, there's going to be one patient out in the waiting room who doesn't want to wait any longer, and they leave. So that's potential, you know, that may be $300, $500, $1,000 that the hospital is going to lose because that patient decided to leave because their wait was too long. And I think it's really hard to quantify that. I don't know how you would put together a study, but I think there's enough there to show that this is a drop in the bucket. It's a small price to pay to have quality instruments because the upsides are too many.
Well, and I think kind of along with that, with hard to quantify, but metrics that we know do matter, is extra hand washing opportunities, right? So, you know, from the infection prevention side, we all know that one of the primary opportunities for hand washing that we call opportunities for hand washing is anytime someone enters and when they leave a room. So if you're making extra trips into and out of an emergency room because your laceration kit keeps breaking, that's hand washing opportunities that you're having to, you know, be responsible for. And because there's so much pressure, because the physician is probably already frustrated because the patient's family is sitting there staring at you with, you know, evil eyes wondering what's taking so long, you know, those are the opportunities that typically get missed because you're just in a hurry to just hurry up and get it done.
Absolutely. It is. It's a very uncomfortable experience when you're trying to sew up little Susie's forehead, and mom, dad, and brother are all staring at you, and you can't tie a knot because it gets caught every single time on the needle driver. So it is. It can be a very trying and frustrating experience, and you just want to be able to get in there, do a good job, and get out. And then the family starts, everything okay? What's wrong? Why is that happening? Why do you have to go get another kit? Well, the honest answer. So it is. It can make things, you know, more difficult from a lot of different angles. You've got the clinician satisfaction, you've got throughput, you've got all these different things. And I think, you know, this white paper, I really tried to look and I tried to find and see if there was anything out there, and there just wasn't. So this was kind of my effort to try and put some of this together. And you know, the feedback that I got from other physicians was good. And it was nice to be able to put this all together and be able to share it. And hopefully some physicians out there will be able to take this and make some changes for themselves and to be able to get better equipment.
Well, it was a great labor of love and passion. And Patrick, I think it was great that you put your own time, energy, and money into being able to gather this information, share it with others, and try to, I mean, honestly, to make improvements in healthcare, we're always looking for resources and we're always looking for proof of concept, always looking for data to help make justification. So great job with all of that. And I just want to thank you again for coming on. And one of the things that's great about this podcast is just giving different viewpoints, and it's great to hear it. Every season we try to get at least one physician or surgeon on the show to be able to share that perspective. So you did a great job this season, and we want to thank you for coming on.
Absolutely. I really appreciate the opportunity, and anything I can do to help out, let me know.
That was Dr. Patrick O'Malley, emergency physician at Newberry County Memorial Hospital, and talking about the need for quality instrumentation in emergency rooms. And it's just one of those things, Mike, a back and forth around quality instrumentation. It's one of those clinics, too, that sometimes you send out the instrument sets and then it comes back with Pakistan, and SPD is a little frustrated because the Pakistan instruments make their way into the OR sets, or sometimes, you know, an emergency admission, they'll make their way. I think overall, it's just quality instrumentation in general is sometimes a hard thing to manage. And I know Dr. O'Malley here has got a pretty good case for end user experience, physician and surgeon satisfaction, but also the impact on patient satisfaction. And we know, as I mentioned to him kind of as we were wrapping up the interview, but the waiting times in emergency rooms, boy, all those urgent care centers got set up because that was becoming such an issue. So just being able to work efficiently can have a great deal of impact on how much your emergency room waiting rooms are just getting packed in and how quickly they can be moved along.
Yeah, and I really appreciated the way that Dr. O'Malley obviously is a very humble guy. He referred to himself and, you know, his physician colleagues as craftsmen, right? And that means that craftsmen need their tools to work properly. And that's who we are. I mean, and if you've ever wondered about in the sterile processing world, do we matter? Do we make a difference? And the answer is obviously yes. We affect the tools, and the tools are the things that actually touch the patients. They're what the craftsmen, in this case, the physicians, depend upon to do their job well. And if those aren't performing up to snuff, it has a number of impacts. So again, I think I've said this on the show multiple times before, but I'm going to keep saying it. Don't ever doubt that you have a dramatic impact on that patient's outcome.
That's going to do it for this week's show. As a reminder, you can help support Beyond Clean by subscribing on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and Spotify. We'd certainly appreciate a rating and a review because your feedback is important to the show. And if you have any topics that you'd like us to cover on a future episode, just send an email to info@beyondclean.net. On behalf of Mike and myself, thank you for listening to this week's episode of Beyond Clean.